Thursday. It's time for our Climate Thursday conversation, and we are joined in the studio by a familiar voice for Climate Thursday from Duke's Nicholas Institute. It is Senior Policy Analyst Ashley Ward. How are you, Ashley?
I'm doing well. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. This is the last News on the Hill of 2022.
It is.
I hadn't really processed that until now. I've been looking very forward to my upcoming four-day weekend, but I had not processed that this is the last edition of News on the Hill for the...
We have to make it count then.
We do. We do have to make it count. So we're going to kind of review 2022 in this episode of Climate Thursday. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, though, this was just, for you personally, this was quite a year. And you were traveling a lot this year, as I recall. It's the last couple of times I've seen you, you haven't just gotten back from a trip for the first time all year. So how's the year been?
It has been crazy in all the best of ways. I mean, it will be a year that I look back on for a long time for not just, you know, my own personal growth, but where it took my career and all the things that I learned. And it's been a wonderful, humbling, great experience.
It's hard to even, I just asked you that question and didn't process until you started answering that this was still the year that you were running for Congress also. There's been so much this year that seems like it was a long time ago, but it was just like 9 months ago, wasn't it?
It really has been like drinking from a fire hose. Yeah.
So we wanted to start with some thoughts on the Special Committee on Climate Change being sunsetted as the year comes to a conclusion. So what are your thoughts on that?
So, of course, I'm sad to see it go. I think, you know, I don't really know, but I think that it's probably been one of the more effective special committees that I can imagine. I read in its report that they made over 700 recommendations, and almost half of them were actually picked up in legislation. So, I mean, I think that's pretty incredible because, you know, I don't know what the rate is on other, you know, and it started out not as a committee to write legislation. It never was. What it was, and the thing that made it so unusual and what I'm sad to see go, is it was a committee that truly brought science and data and community, you know, community level people who are personally impacted by the climate crisis. And it connected them with members of Congress and all of their hearings. And it was a great effort in learning and expanding the perspective of people in Congress. And all the members on the committee then took what they learned and heard back to their legislative committees and could use that to influence how they wrote legislation. And so I think Congress needs more of those kinds of committees, actually, to help bridge that gap between policy, science, community. And I'm sad to see it go.
Right. It sort of functioned the way you expect these sort of things to function. Like when something goes to a special committee, this is the way it should work. And oftentimes it's just like a place where an issue that they don't really want to deal with is being stashed away.
Right. That's my impression anyway. And so, you know, when I read that almost half of their recommendation had actually been adopted into legislation, I thought that was a pretty darn good success rate.
That is good. Our guest is Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute. We're talking about the year in climate and sustainability. So looking back at 2022, what is there to be happy about looking back in the past 12 months?
Over this week, I read an op-ed that was in New York Times written by Leah Stokes, who's an energy expert at UC Santa Barbara. And if you haven't read it, you should go take a look at it. But she makes the case that 2022 may very well be the year in which we finally, you know, the beginning of, you know, addressing the climate crisis. And I tend to agree with her. I mean, she's been optimistic, very involved in some of the legislation that was passed. But I think legislatively, I'm not sure that we could say there's ever, at least in my lifetime, been a more productive year. You know, we had the bipartisan Infrastructure and Jobs Act, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, $370 billion for climate in that one alone. And then, of course, at the end of the year, the omnibus bill that just passed that actually, you know, looped back around and picked up some of the things that had been missing in some of the other bills. So, you know, I don't know how we could look back at 2022 and not say that it has been quite clearly one of the most successful years for climate policy.
And I've talked to a couple of people who've suggested that there has been this kind of quiet change amongst people who identify as moderate Republicans, even though that's kind of a non-thing anymore. But there's been a sort of quiet change to a very, very much a willingness to address some climate issues, particularly as we see these natural climate events being more and more costly financially. But it just does seem like there's more willingness to move on this from a legislative standpoint. Like it's drifting more into a bipartisan sort of issue than it was even 5 years ago, I feel like.
And I think that what you just described is in part because of the Special Committee on the Climate Crisis. One of the things they learned and that they've talked about is understanding better how to communicate and reach across the aisle and talk about things in a bipartisan way, really talking about, for example, American manufacturing and how to get the labor involved into this. And so these are all things that are really important, and how we communicate what we're trying to do, even with people who traditionally haven't agreed with us, is probably more important than how we communicate it to people who agree with us. And so one of the things that committee was able to do is really think about what we need to do with climate policy that's going to bring more people to the table and on board.
What else from 2022 was there to feel good about climate-wise?
With the legislation, I think, you know, one thing I'm excited about is that means the Biden administration has put us on track to meet the 2030 climate goals, which is a 40% reduction, right? And thereby the 2050 goal. But other things that happened in COP27, you know, one of the disappointments with all the COPs is the number of fossil fuel lobbyists that are there. But one of the things that came out of this one was the loss and damage, which is basically saying wealthy countries, we're going to set up a fund to help repair the damage for less developed countries so they can move forward. And I think, you know, that is a model that even just domestically with our own policy, we need to think about, which I think that's a win. The other is the elections in Brazil. I mean, you know, we had Da Silva elected, who has a record of reducing deforestation of the rainforest, which is going to have global implications after the last administration there just devastatingly deforestation policy. The White House formed the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. If you haven't looked that up, that's really incredible. It's a wonderful thing to happen right out of the White House, because what it has done is brought people together from a diverse group of people work from communities, and their job is to make recommendations to policy and also sort of think about federally how all of these things coordinate, which has been wonderful. The Department of Justice now also has a division for environmental justice. So there's, aside from the sheer investment from legislation and dollars coming from the federal government, we have some actual, you know, some movement on things that are really important that maybe flew under the radar but are still important.
That's the familiar voice of Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute. And we're talking climate and sustainability for 2022 here on Climate Thursday. And I think it's time maybe to look ahead to 2023 now. What are the kind of climate stories and issues that you're going to have your eye on going into the new year?
I have three things. The first we've talked about on the show before, which is everybody in every community needs to be asking their community leaders, how can we position ourselves to take advantage of these federal funds? Do we need to group with other communities surrounding us and hire grant people who can know how to identify and apply for and manage federal grants? Getting the money from these federal coffers through state coffers to community local level coffers is going to be one of the biggest challenges we have. And communities have to be in front of that. They can't wait and let it go by. Otherwise, all of this huge investment and success from 2022 really will have been for naught. So is the rubber going to meet the road? Is whether or not the communities can get the money. So if you're a community leader, situate your community so you can get the money and manage it when you get it. So that's number one. Number two, one of the things that is starting to happen that is really frightening to me but should be on everybody's radar is there's a concerted nationwide effort for people who are clean energy opponents to go in at the local level and support policies that would make it very difficult to actually realize, you know, this transition. And this is upsetting to me because particularly last time we talked about rural communities and the ability of this clean energy transition to be able to build back the rural economy. And this stands in opposition of that too. And so in rural areas where people are, worried about putting in solar farms forms because of property values or other things. They're being funded in the back end by groups that, you know, spread misinformation and outright falsehoods about the clean energy transition in order to drum up local support based off of emotion and pass policies so that would make it difficult to actually realize all that we've put in place. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think we should all, Democrats need to be talking about this. They need to have a counter, anybody who wants the clean transition to happen needs to be having an equally as robust conversation in their communities to the opposite, right? We have to counter this. We cannot wait. And then as a moment of hope, I think, for 2023, 2022 was all about setting us up for the clean energy transition. What I want to see in 2023 more than anything is for us to use 2023 as really talking about climate health. What does this mean now? We have the clean energy transition that we've started. We've really made a long way on this in this last year. What? How can we now transition to thinking about health and well-being in our communities and the impact the climate crisis has on us?
That's Ashley Ward. This is Climate Thursday, and we've got just about a minute left. So do you want to ask if there's anything that you wanted to mention that we haven't gotten to yet?
No, I think, I do have one thing. Everybody always says, what can I do? What can I do locally? What can I do as an individual? What you can do is continue to talk about it, continue to read about it, be educated about it, communicate with the people in your circles about it. And that's what I would say for 2023. Let's all keep talking about climate.
That sounds like a good plan for me. What have you got going on coming up in 2023? More travel in your future?
Not quite as much travel so far. I'm really excited to say that I'm going to be working on designing and developing a climate health initiative for the Nicholas Institute, and I'm really excited about this. And so look for seeing how that develops as the year progresses.
Thank you so much for being here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.